Welcome everyone to the Auckland Buddhist Center, particularly all of you that are here for the first time. Never been here before. It's great to see people coming. So we've got on these Monday nights, we call it our Dharma night, and we've got a new theme starting, and it's on the Brahmaviharas. And the Brahmaviharas are a particular framework in Buddhism for talking about positive emotions, and particularly for learning how to cultivate more positive emotions. So my name is Ratnavua. I teach here at the center, and over the next, basically I'm going to introduce it tonight, and then over 4 weeks we're going to have people giving personal anecdotes and reflections around each of the Brahmaviharas. So the first one is metta, and Helen's going to be talking for a little while on that. And the second one will be karuna, and metta basically means loving kindness, but I'll say a bit about the words in a second. And then the second one's karuna, or compassion, and Mariana's going to be talking to that. Third one's going to be mudita, which is appreciation, and Mudita Nandi's going to talk to that topic for a couple minutes. And then on the fourth one, it'll be Guhyasiddhi talking to upeksha, or equanimity. And then we'll have an evening of wrapping it up where we'll probably just like answer questions and talk about it. So the idea for these Monday nights was a little different from how we normally do our Monday nights. So we would normally do a talk starting now for probably about 40 minutes or so. And then after the talk, we would have 20 minutes, 15 minutes of questions and answers, and we'd have a tea break, and then we'd have a meditation starting like around 8:15 or 8:20. But we figured that it's winter time, and everybody wants to get home, and basically we thought we'd experiment with ending a bit early. And also, the reason why we wanted to do this was because we really want to encourage everyone that attends these evenings to stay through the meditation. So the way to think about it is that what I'm going to talk about initially and what people are going to talk about is the Buddha's teachings around these positive emotions. So we'll talk about the Buddha's teachings around the positive emotions, then we'll have the personal anecdotes around these positive emotions, and then we'll do a meditation where we're actually practicing cultivating those emotions and creating some sort of more emotional fluidity. So the evening will kind of really sit as a whole. There's a particular framework in Buddhism called the levels of wisdom. Yeah, and in the levels of wisdom, the first step is just to hear and to learn the language, an accurate language that corresponds to the nature of reality. And then what you do is you try and find the experiential equivalent to that language in your own experience. And then you start working with that experience using the framework and the tools of a language that is accurate. So I think that's particularly relevant here. We're talking about emotions because I don't know about you, but I don't think my emotional vocabulary was all that rich. And to be honest, I think it could still do with a lot of elaboration and refinement. But as I started improving my emotional vocabulary, and as I started trying to and seeing kind of what emotions shifted other emotions, It was quite fun, really, because you start to have the ability to respond differently to situations and not feel blocked in those situations, and that's liberating. It's immensely liberating, and also sometimes what can happen is you just get kind of like caught in like a cul-de-sac of emotion where you kind of can't see your way out of it. And I think what I started to learn was some ways to get out of those cul-de-sacs. You know, I started realizing that instead of being surrounded by walls, they weren't really that high, and I could either climb over them or even go around them. So, I found this sort of exploration quite good. So that's kind of an introduction to the theme. Yep. So we're hoping to be done by 8:30 for the next 6 nights. So a real encouragement for everybody to stay through the meditation. So we teach 2 meditations here at the center. We teach the mindfulness of breathing, which is just bringing your attention onto the breath. And we teach the metta bhavana, which is the cultivation of metta, which is the first of the brahmaviharas that I talked about, being loving kindness. So what we'll do over the next 6 weeks is kind of like a mixture of the two, to be quite honest. I'll be quite freely kind of mixing them up a little bit. But tonight in particular, we're going to do a period of the mindfulness of breathing, but we're going to look at it from an emotional perspective, more of an emotional perspective. In particular, cultivating more contentment in the mindfulness of breathing. So I've got 3 topics to talk about tonight before we do that. And the first one is just the theme of emotional wisdom. We were sitting around trying to figure out a title to come up with, and we thought, well, we knew we wanted to use the word emotion, and we thought, well, we could call it like, well, I like emotional fluidity, to be honest. I've always liked the idea of being emotionally fluid. But, you know, we talked about emotional intelligence, and that made me think about some of these terms that are out there and whether they actually do have a kind of a complementary side in Buddhism. And I looked 2 of them up today, I just to kind of contrast what emotional wisdom might not be. First one I looked up was positive thinking. Yeah, there's a whole movement around positive thinking. And I looked at the example of it, and it was a woman who had her boyfriend who they'd been dating for 2 years long distance, and the boyfriend was now going to be moving into her apartment. And she started thinking about everything that could go wrong when he moved in. And her mind started ruminating about all the possible things that would go wrong. And then they had a weekend together, and it was miserable. And she thought to herself, you know, this is where positive thinking would be helpful, because I was thinking negative thoughts repeatedly. I was telling myself this negative story, and basically then it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I kind of was miserable to be around when we did get together. And they say that positive thinking reduces stress by eliminating negative self-talk, and it counters pessimism. But as I was looking at her example, I think that this is why we used the word wisdom when we talked about emotional wisdom, because in Buddhism, one of the basic ideas of Buddhism and the basic thing the Buddha was talking about was that everything is constantly in a state of change. And because we don't see that, we actually fix the world around us through our language and in our thinking. We sort of we don't really realize the power to influence the world that we really have. We think that we're a bit more subjected to the world, and that the world's less influenced by us, and we're less influenced by the world. And in particular, I think that the example she gave was really kind of fixed patterns of thought, and almost like an emotional rigidity and a tight anticipation of painful outcomes or even unchangeable painful situations. But from a Buddhist perspective, there is a discernment where you can see that things might be painful, and they might be painful for others, but it's not that you just think positively about them, because some things aren't positive. Like alcoholism is not positive. You know, it's like you don't want to just start thinking positively about a friend who's an alcoholic and how they'll see their way through it. You basically want to face up to the reality of the situation and respond with compassion. And I think that's where what I'm going to be talking about for the next 6 weeks, and we're going to be reflecting on, where the Buddhist perspective on emotion is very different from positive thinking. Because in the Buddhist exploration of emotion, we are willing to go into those tough those tough situations which might be painful or difficult, but we do it with an emotional positivity, you know? And in the case of compassion, we're willing to help people, but we're also recognizing that, in a way, that work they need to do themselves. Yeah? And you're not willing to go down with the ship in a way. You don't over-identify with the situation. So I think that's one of the ways in which what we're going to be talking about very much differs from the positive thinking tradition. The other thing with the emotional intelligence, I looked that up, and what they talked about was the ability to identify and manage your own emotions and the emotions of others. They said there were three facets to it. They said that emotional awareness was the ability to identify your emotions and those of others. Second of all, the ability to harness your emotions and apply them to tasks like thinking and problem solving. And thirdly, the ability to manage emotions, regulate your own emotions, and cheer up or calm down other people. And so I think that all that's true, you know, that you can do that and all that helps. But I think in particular, one of the differences when it comes to Buddhist emotions is that when you talk about the positive emotions from a Buddhist perspective, you're not the emotions aren't about managing the situation. They're really about transcending it. And the emotions are not kind of particles or billiard balls that are kind of moved around in your life or in another person. But they're actually much more fluid than that. In fact, from a Buddhist perspective, emotions are more like energy. Yeah? And it is true that when you have you bring a particular emotional state to something, that influences the situation and can change it and alter it. But it's truly amazing when you bring something like kindness to a situation which is a difficult, an objectively difficult one, and it just can melt. It can melt the polarizations. It can melt the differences between people. There's a woman that comes here who talks about a coworker she worked with where she just decided one day that she was going to try and practice compassion and kindness towards this coworker. And this coworker was someone who everybody had kind of given up with. But over the course of a year, and it wasn't a quick fix, but over the course of the year, she completely transformed that situation. And that whole relationship's been changed because of that. So I think when we talk about emotional wisdom, we are talking about the ability to almost magically change situations through becoming more emotionally positive within them. And it's not just about thinking. It's not just telling yourself a new story. It's actually working on your heart's response to what's actually happening in changing how you're responding to it, you know, changing how you feel about it. In Buddhism, when we talk about wisdom, we frequently talk about what's called like the open dimension of being. And when you're aware of that open dimension of being, when you're aware of the true nature of reality, which is no fixed nature, the immediate response to people who are suffering, who are usually suffering due to some rigidity that isn't fluid, the immediate response to them is one of compassion. It's just naturally one of compassion. And in Buddhism, they talk about wisdom without compassion being lame, and compassion without wisdom being blind. And I really like that, because you do need wisdom in order for your emotions to be wise, you know, to not be blinded. You know, you need to see clearly. And similarly, if you just see clearly and you don't have that emotional response, then you're lame. You'll be lame. You won't be as effective in the situations around you. So I've always liked that. All right, so the Brahmaviharas, the positive emotions that we're going to be dealing with. First of all, just saying that cultivating emotional positivity is a very basic step on the Buddhist path. There's a particular framework we use where it's the second step in this framework. The first step is just integration, just trying to be the same person from moment to moment. The way I like talking about integration, which I think is quite simple and easy, is, do you ever have that experience how you can be, like, you could be different with your family than you are with your boyfriend or girlfriend, than you are at your job, as you might be kind of when you're completely with a bunch of strangers you don't know? You know, you're different people almost. It's not completely true, but there is a lack of integration there. You're not the same person in all those situations. And I'm not just talking about being shy versus being comfortable. I'm talking about, you know, other things. So the first step really in Buddhism and what meditation can help us do is to just become more integrated. But then the next step is to actually, once you become integrated, you start to become aware of how you are too in these different situations. So we were just talking in the kitchen. Somebody was recounting a story of driving here, having somebody pull in front of them and getting really angry. And it just, the anger just kind of flushed up. It just kind of went right up and it just came out, you know. And they were wishing really, you know, ugly thoughts on this person. And that's, in a way, that's integration. Because in a way, you're very aware of what's going on. You're very aware of it. And you're just like, you know, so the step of emotional positivity is when you start to take that emotion and take responsibility for it. Yeah. And what they said was that, you know, after it happened, they immediately felt remorse. They thought, oh, how could I have wished that on that person for such a simple thing? You know, and that's where you're starting to do the emotional work. Yeah. And that's not a failing to have had that experience. In fact, I would consider it a success, because it's really positive to have that emotional fluidity and then to recognize how you want to change it. And Buddhism is a lot about awareness and change and taking responsibility. And you can't change, you can't take responsibility if you don't even know what's happening. A lot of times what we do is we'll get really angry, but then we might just leave it on the other person. You know, we leave it to them. We think, well, actually, they're the idiot. It was raining. What were they thinking? It's just like, it's proper for any human being to be angry with them because they're endangering people's lives, you know, which is probably true. But the anger that you're feeling is yours. It doesn't have to do with them, you know. So owning that, starting to refine it, is kind of the territory we're going into over the next 6 weeks. And in that territory of refining and transforming and working on our emotional response is also the territory of Buddhist ethics. So you might be surprised to hear that if you don't know much about Buddhism. But Buddhist ethics is about becoming more skillful with your emotional response to the world. And they use, and the Buddha used that word skill quite purposefully. So Buddhist ethics is not an ethics of duty. It's an ethics of learning how to live more effectively in the world. Yeah. So it is a skill. So over the next 6 weeks, what I'd like to encourage you to do is to see it as an opportunity to learn and explore. So I'm going to be throwing out some of these words that I'm going to encourage you to think of them as words that you don't quite know what they mean. Yeah? And so I'm going to try and keep to the Pali. So I'm going to talk about metta rather than loving kindness. Because if I talk about loving kindness, you might think that you know what I mean. But if I talk about metta, it'll remind you that we're maybe it'll remind you that we're going into new territory. So when we talk about metta, Also, metta is not something that's just it and something else. And it's not just a duality. Normally, when we think about metta, the other side of it might be something like hatred. Yeah? And so you could have metta on one end of this continuum, and you could have hatred on the other. And a lot of times we just think in that kind of basic polarized black and white way. But what I want to encourage you to start thinking about is in terms of a continuum between those two. You know, in the middle might be something like, you know, neutral, you know, or kind of tolerant or patient. You know, more towards metta might be friendly or curious. More towards hatred might be irritable or frustrated. So start thinking of these things not so much as either, you know, on or off, but more as kind of different shades, different colors. Yeah? And also, even when you talk about loving kindness or metta, think about it as like a constellation of emotions too. Think about all the different kind of words you might use, all the different feelings that might come up, and let yourself explore some of these words. Let yourself think about, well, does that word really work? You know? Or how is my emotion maybe not metta? So say, for example, with metta, you can really care about something. You can deeply care about it. Yeah? But metta does not have that sticky sense of self in it. Yeah? That is sometimes in care. So if we've got metta that's kind of lost a bit of that or has a bit of the self in it, what it can become is a bit of attachment or control. Yeah? So you're saying, well, I really care about this, therefore I demand that you do it this way. Because it's really important that flans are cooked in this way. Yeah? Because I care. I care! You know? And it's not actually metta. It's attachment. It's controlling. And so sometimes you have to really look and you have to think to yourself, is this really metta? Is this an open-hearted care, an open-hearted kindness? Or is it like metta but not? Is it like metta but actually it's about my way or the highway? Mm-hmm. Yeah? And the classic example of this is parents with children, isn't it? It's just like you've got children and you're like, you as the parent, out of care for the child, know how the child should be, what their career should be, who they should be friends with, what they should eat. You know all those things. You know? And there's some truth to it. There is some truth that you don't want them to get hurt. But you know, you can't control their life, can you? You know, and it's not true metta when you try and do that. It's a sticky metta. It's a controlling metta. So what I'd like to encourage you to do is, and we'll be talking about some of these things over the next couple of weeks, I'd like to encourage you to just, you know, kind of hold loose to all your labels and keep exploring these things a little with the hopes that that we'll kind of refine our understanding of our emotional makeup. And in particular, we do want to find the lived experience that's equivalent to the words that we're going to be talking about. So Buddhism is not happy staying theoretical. Yeah, it's important to learn the language, but if you never apply the language to your experience, you'll actually never know whether Buddhism's worth following or not. It'll just be blind faith. But if you take the words and you start to act on them, yeah, in your experience, then if you say that you believe it, it'll be based on your experience. And I assure you that that, you know, Buddhism does offer a true kind of toolbox for changing your life. So But in order to really know where that toolbox, unless you want to be one of those dudes that just owns a toolbox he's never used, he's got a really $400 drill that they've never used and a kind of a wrench set that's perfectly clean. Unless you want to be one of those sorts of people, you know, use the tools. You know, try the drill out and try the wrench out and see what it fits. I was surprised the other day I changed a washer. I think I've ever changed a washer before in my life. Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you a secret. It's really frickin' easy. Yeah. But you know, one of the things is that you can get it in your mind that somehow, I don't know, it's not easy. Somehow you can think that it's just really difficult. But literally, all I had to do was undo a screw. You know? So I was really impressed with myself. And it was funny because other people were like, wow, amazing. And I'm thinking, yeah, pretty impressive, huh? But it's our secret, yeah? All right, so so that's kind of it. The only other thing I wanted to close with was just this idea that when it comes to looking at the emotions from a Buddhist perspective and looking at the Brahmaviharas in particular, what you get is not so much ever an accomplishment, but almost like a balance or a fluidity. So what I found in my life was that, I find myself kind of in a situation and I can take some of these tools and try and practice them. And it just helps me move out of any rigidity. But it doesn't necessarily give me a solution. It's not like it's something you can always rely on. You always go back to that. But what you want to do is you want to keep the heart fluid. You want to keep the heart moving. You want to keep it, you want to keep it moving. It's a bit like awareness, yeah? Awareness can never become static because it's not the nature of awareness to be static. So what you're trying to do when you develop mindfulness is to become mindful of changing moments, yeah? So you can't be mindful of something if you think becoming mindful means to kind of gain some thing that then kind of like you've accomplished it, it's more that mindfulness just keeps deepening. And anybody at the center here that's been doing a lot of meditation will tell you that they don't feel probably that they've got to the end of their meditation practice. It's not like they become a meditation expert and then it's just like, oh, well, I've done that. I move on to the next thing. Yeah? It doesn't work that way, does it? What you do is you practice mindfulness, and mindfulness just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper. And similarly, with this sort of working with your emotions, the Brahmaviharas, you just keep doing it. You keep turning it. You keep acting on it. You keep kind of letting go of the control and developing compassion. You know, when you find that you're despairing in a situation, you start to rejoice in the good things that are happening around you. You start to rejoice in the good qualities of your friends. You start to practice gratitude. You know, and if that sort of mind state becomes a bit polyanderish and a bit kind of naively optimistic, you kind of ground it with a sense of the sort of the rise and fall of life and how nothing is constant, everything's constantly changing, and that's okay. That's the way it is. That there is life, there is death, there is black, and there is light, and you just sort of realize that. And if then out of that you sort of become a slightly indifferent to the rise and fall of things, you bring care back in. Yeah, you start to care again. And the care then cuts through the indifference and engages you back with the world. And then once again, when you find that you care and your care is becoming sticky and controlling, you sort of relax and you let go and you realize that the world is kind of its own beast. And you can't control it. You know, you can't hold on to it. And you sort of let go. And you just keep going through that cycle of kind of letting go and then appreciating and then sort of resting in and then caring, you know, and just keep going through that cycle. And in a way, it's like working out. You know, you find at the end of it, the heart is just, the heart moves. You know, the heart kind of responds to the situation you're in. And the thing about that is that it's extremely joyful. Yeah? So you can find yourself just in a really joyful place. And the life's not against you. You know, life's no longer against you. It's with you, and you're with life, and it's extremely beautiful. Who wouldn't want to be there, huh? So that's all I've got to say to start this series.